By the way, real quick, before we jump into the episode, I just want to say that one of the reasons, you probably already know that, but one of the reasons I create all this content is to meet people from around the world, and not just me to meet the people, but the people to meet themselves. And one of the bad things about podcasting is that there are no comments, like you cannot comment. So I'm thinking, let's try and fix that. So I'm opening a hashtag, Curious Pavel Podcast. You know, it's so funny. It's kind of difficult to find a hashtag that nobody has ever used before. So I just want to have a hashtag just for us, just for the podcast. So you want to communicate with other people who are listening to the podcast, Curious Pavel Podcast hashtag, use it on Instagram or LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, whatever you prefer. Just let's start using it and let's start connecting. Let's meet people from around the world. Curious Pavel Podcast. Go share a post and let's communicate. Let's meet new people. And let's go to the episode. Hello, everyone. Ian, thanks so much for joining us. Welcome to the podcast. This is something new that I'm trying. I'm implementing. I'm including our live audience here in the new podcast episodes. It's good to have some interaction. How are you doing, Ian?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. Ian, I'm very excited because we're going to be talking about a country that I'm not sure if I'm going to visit. I've never been to, but I don't know much about as well. But before we get there, can you tell us something about yourself? Because as like most of my guests, I never met you. I actually, before we started communicating, I didn't know anything about you. I mean, I don't know much about you now as well. Can you introduce yourself with a few sentences to me and to my guests, my audience, sorry?
Sure, okay. So I'm a full-time freelance travel writer, adventurer and speaker. So I dedicate my time mainly to Africa, and those little bits of Africa like Sierra Leone that potentially have these bountiful places to visit but aren't on the usual radar of your everyday travel company, and just to try and dispel some of the ideas that Africa is this dark and terrible place where you're going to get mugged as soon as you set foot off the airplane.
That is indeed the picture that is projected in most of us. I have been to Uganda. It was thanks to a travel gig that I did. You know, I was filming there for a week. It was really great. But why Africa for you and why Sierra Leone?
The why Africa is something that's really difficult to answer. I think I just love the possibilities of Africa and that sort of contrast between what you do expect of, say, going somewhere like Sierra Leone and then what you actually experience on the ground. And I can't deny there's lots of poverty, as you probably experienced in Uganda, but there is also this great sort of joy of life, and people don't worry about those little things. They're just happy, you know, they wake up in the morning and the sun is shining, and therefore it's a good day. And that is something that we kind of lose in the Western world. I'm based in London, with all this little trivialities of life, perhaps.
That is true. I agree. I always say to people, we just lack perspective. People here are complaining because they didn't get enough cream in their coffee, while there are other people in the world that they need to walk 4 miles just to grab clean water. And I always say people that are, you know, down, I'm just like, just book a trip, but don't book it to the Bahamas or to Paris, just book it somewhere in Africa, you know, have a different point of view, and you see how good your life actually is. And when I went to Africa, I had this mindset that I have it good. I have it good. And I thought that it wouldn't be very drastic for me to Africa, but it's still, you feel something because you see how other people live, and it's I don't know, it's a whole new experience. So you say you're based in London. Where are you from?
So I was born and brought up in London, so I've really not moved very far in my life.
All right, which part?
So South London, place called Croydon.
Croydon, east or west?
It's kind of immediately south of central London.
No, because there are two quarter.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah. East Croydon station's about, I don't know, 5 minutes from where I am.
All right. Okay. It's a nice area, I think. I mean, Croydon was
a big... I don't know about that, but it's good for the airport.
Yeah, especially if you travel a lot, you can just one hop away. All right, great. Well, let's dive in instead. That was a great introduction, you know, of you. Let's dive in Sierra Leone. Before that, when was your first trip over there, and then how often you're going there?
Sierra Leone specifically?
Sorry? Yes, Sierra Leone. Yes.
So my last trip was a 5 month trip there in 2016 over to 2017. And I'd been there one time before that on a sort of a shorter 2 week longer journey across West Africa.
Okay, 2016. All right. So for people who want to go there, I mean, I don't know how is it entering there. When I went to Uganda, you need a visa, but you pay cash for the visa straight away on the border. And here you go. Welcome to Uganda. That was it. Are there any restrictions entering Sierra Leone? Like what is happening? Can we just go like that?
It's getting easier and easier, actually, with more and more sort of normal airlines flying there. You do need a visa, but you can buy it online. So you do it online before you go. Just print out your visa, show it at the customs booth at the airport, and you know, you're in 5 minutes, you're through without any problems. I've done that both times, once overland and once at the airport, and I didn't have a problem doing it that way.
Yeah, it's a good thing to mention. It's a different type of visa because, you know, you straight away pay, here you go. Wow, if most of people, when you hear visa, you're like, oh my God, I feel like visa in USA, you need to go to interviews, then wait yes. for it like this. No. You need visa, but you go pay cash straight away. Boom, here you go. Welcome to Sierra Leone. Exactly, okay.
Yeah.
So Sierra Leone is in the west part of Africa. What would you say we can visit over there when we get there?
Well, I mean, most of the sort of standard tourist sort of attractions actually lie along the Atlantic coast. So Freetown itself is really interesting because it's, so anyone who doesn't know, Sierra Leone and particularly Freetown was set up as a place to return freed transatlantic slaves to the African continent, which is why it's called Freetown. So it's got lots of sort of little but really important attractions from that period, which was sort of the late 1700s and then the early 1800s. And that's really where Sierra Leone grew as a country, became a British colony after that. So there's an interesting sort of ancient courthouse. There's the cotton tree, which is supposed to have been there since the very beginning. This area called the Portuguese Steps, which is supposedly where the slaves stepped ashore. So there's lots of history in Freetown. And then you head down the Freetown Peninsula, there's these amazing beaches dotted all along. Some are white sand, some are orange. There's a couple of black sand beaches. And then you keep going along, you hit one of my favorite places, which is the Banana Islands. And then you keep going on from there, you hit the Turtle Islands, which are these islands which are kind of in the middle of nowhere, very traditional, authentic way of life that really hasn't changed very much for years and years.
Okay, so it's not just the coastline, but you have a few islands that you can, you know, quickly go with a boat from.
Yeah. So the Banana Islands is about a 2 hour drive from Freetown to a town called Kent, and then it's about a 20 minute boat ride to the islands themselves.
Okay, and then they're quite small, aren't they? Can easily.
Yeah, they're really small. There's population about 200 people.
Wow.
And they're probably, I think they're 8 kilometers long, sort of a long, thin, kind of banana shaped, which I think is where they get their name mm-hmm. from, with basically one small town at one end, and then one town at the other end with nothing but jungle, with monkeys and monitor lizards and little caves where you can swim in between.
Does everybody knows you on the Banana Islands?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, it is one of those places where every family knows everyone else. They're all intricately linked. So basically, whatever the color of your skin, they're going to know you're a foreigner, and they're going to welcome you and make sure you have a good time on their island.
Okay, so they're friendly bunch of people.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Oh, that's great. What about this cotton tree? You briefly mentioned it, and I quickly Googled it. It's a massive tree in what it looks like in the middle of the city.
Yeah, so that's exactly it. Cotton trees are really important in Sierra Leonean culture because that's kind of where communities would gather together in the original, you know, when you were still small groups of people in the middle of nowhere. That's where you would gather and have your tribal meetings and what have you. So this cotton tree sits right in the middle of downtown Freetown. Mm-hmm. It's got bats hanging from it roosting. It's right next to the National Museum, and it's kind of the heart of the city, and it's supposed to have been there from the very earliest days. And supposedly they decided to base Freetown where they did because of the presence of this cotton tree there.
Okay, so when you go there to that's really interesting because it's so nice. You don't see much of a well, you see some trees, but it's a lot of buildings, and you see this massive tree just in the middle of a roundabout.
It's in the middle of a roundabout. Right in the center of town with all the sort of government buildings and the telecoms offices and all of that sort of thing. And there are some little parks dotted around Freetown, but obviously they've got better things to be worrying about than keeping parks nice and clean. But there is this cotton tree that is basically, you know, all roads kind of lead to this cotton tree.
that's nice. I just remember like all roads lead to Rome. That's
exactly
a bit,
the same
thing. A bit different in Sierra Leone. Okay, so when you get there, then what do you do? Do you just go to a different place every time to take pictures, or like, what do you do when you get there?
So I just kind of, I don't know how to say it other than I could just kind of roam around and look at a map, see where might be interesting, where, you know, might be slightly off the beaten path, and just head off there. Sometimes I have the most boring time of my life. Other times I discover these amazing things that maybe people, you know, don't normally see on trips like these.
Well, that's what happens when you go off the beaten track. You don't know what you're going to find. You know, sometimes it's going to be, you know, jungle for miles, but then sometimes you're going to find a nice waterfall over there. So what are the... What are the two places that are really, really lovely in your mind and you will love to go back again and again in Sierra Leone?
So the first is probably the Turtle Islands, which are even smaller than the Banana Islands, much further away. They're kind of, if you imagine that quintessential idea of a tropical, deserted tropical island, that is the Turtle Islands. These tiny sort of sandbars with a few trees, these communities isolated from the rest of Sierra Leone. There's no police, there's no electricity. They lead really simple lives, just fishing, doing a little bit of trade with passing boats. And it, as I say, it's just that kind of idea of almost the getting there is the fun, because you're traveling through basically the Atlantic Ocean. You don't see anything else for hours. You just have to trust that the guy who is sailing there. I think it took me something like 4 hours to get there, and then you arrive to a very basic camp, and it's just about experiencing this very, very natural, authentic lifestyle that the people of the islands still lead.
Wow, so this one is not so close as the Banana Islands.
No, you really need to reserve sort of a couple of days at least to be getting there, exploring them, because I don't know. I think there's sort of 7 or 8 different islands. They've all got their own little culture to them. So you want to see as many of them as you can. They're all slightly different. So you need to reserve two, you know, ideally 3 days to get there and travel around and to get to know these tiny communities of people who live there.
Wow. So how does it work? So you book a tour with somebody and then they provide you accommodation in those little villages over there when you get there?
So accommodation is basically either a simple hut made of palm leaves, or you can take a tent with you. I mean, the weather's so warm in the dry season, at least, that you don't need anything anyway. And then you just sort of set up your camp on sort of a beach area. Huh? You need to take everything with you, from drinking water, food, toilet paper, absolutely everything has to go with you. So you don't want to miss anything. And then you just explore these really natural islands.
How is the situation with drinking water when you went there? Because when I was going to Uganda, they told me don't drink any tap water.
Yeah, so that's pretty much the same for all of Sierra Leone. You can either get bottled water or you can get sort of sachets. They sell, you probably saw it in Uganda as well, they sell water in like plastic bags, sealed plastic bags, which are really odd if you've never seen it before, but it's perfectly safe. Or of course, you can do, which I do quite a lot now, is I just filter my own water. So you take the tap water, filter it in one of various different ways, and then it's safe to drink.
How do you filter it?
I'm really old school. I use iodine tincture. So yeah, a couple of drops of iodine, and basically it makes it impossible for any bacteria or viruses to survive.
When you said I'm old school, I thought you're boiling your water in a in a handmade fire. You know, you make your fire over there and then you just boil it. That's all right.
Okay, I'm not that old school.
Okay. Okay, so you said Turtle Islands. Can you give me one more place that you really enjoyed it, like you can spend hours?
Okay, the other one, I've never been there. I've been desperate to go there. And in 5 months of being in Sierra Leone, I still didn't make it. But it's a national park right in the north of the country, which makes it really difficult to get to. It's got a longer name, but everyone knows it is OK National Park.
OK.
yeah, it's a great name for a national park. It's right on the border, the northern border with Guinea, and it's kind of, you're not going to see a huge sort of savanna safari type experiences, but you can, it's one of the only places in the world you can like canoe next to hippos and they allow you to do that. And there are crocs and monkeys and possibilities of chimps. So it's just sort of starting up as this destination. So it's, again, a bit like Turtle Islands, you basically need to take everything you need with you, but the possibility of seeing animals that don't encounter humans very often is you know, the huge possibility and the huge draw for heading there.
Okay, so that the fact that you say that they don't encounter humans very often, does it mean that that's not so popular thing for people to go to?
Yeah, that's right. As I say, they're just kind of, I mean, it was set up to protect the wildlife firstly, and now they're realizing if we get the tourists in, we can, you know, support the populations of animals that do live there. So it's still very much starting out. And as I say, it's in the far north of Sierra Leone. So really the only reason you'd be heading in that direction is to go to this national park.
I see. Okay. Okay, interesting. So my next question is I'm really curious about the next question, and that is, what did you eat for a whole 5 months?
Well, being on the Atlantic Ocean, pretty much every family has got a fisherman, and they're living through fishing. So I just had fantastic sort of grilled and barbecued fish most of my time there. Everything. So barracuda, grouper, snapper. It's probably one of the cheapest places in the world you can have lobster. The seafood there is just incredible. And then that tends to be served up with either with plain rice or with rice with a sauce or with sort of deep fried plantain, some sort of carbohydrate that's going to fill you up after you've had all of that tasty fish.
Okay. You know, that's very interesting, because when I was going to Uganda, they told me that I need to have some sort of vaccine or vaccination or whatever it was. And then when I went there, they told me, so don't drink tap water and careful what you eat. Then when I arrived, they came to pick me from the airport. And on the way back, they say, okay, let's stop and eat. And they stopped at a street market, like a street joint or something. And they were like, are you hungry? And I'm like, no. And they started laughing. There was a driver and the guy who was with me. They started laughing. He's like, he's scared. I'm like, I don't know what they're eating here. What's happening? So basically, there are a lot of places over there when you have just stalls on the street and they're just grilling stuff. Well, stuff, meat. They're grilling meat on the spot. Sure. And they just stop and take meat on a stick. And that's their snack slash meal. So is it the same in Sierra Leone? I mean, we didn't have that much fish over there, but they're, you know.
Sure, you can definitely get the same kind of barbecue kind of stalls, very impromptu places like in Freetown, sort of like thin strips of beef with onion barbecued or sort of KFC style chicken you can get as well. And obviously, the further away you go from the coast, the more likely it is that you're having sort of chicken and that kind of stuff rather than fish, because they don't transport it because there's no way of preserving it. And I guess the secret, because if you read the guidebook, you wouldn't eat anything. But the secret, I guess, really is making sure it's freshly cooked. So, you know, those guys are grilling it right in front of your face. You know it's hot. You know it's freshly prepared. So it's probably going to be all right.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, to be fair, when we stopped for the very first time, when we stopped, it was night. They stopped on the other side of the road, and I just see, you know, a few people over there doing something, and I was very surprised. Sure, yeah. But yeah, it was all good. Is there any national dish that, you know, except this grilling thing, do they do something specific?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I'm sure there is one, but one that springs to mind is a dish called crin crin, which is the nearest, it's basically a leaf stew. So the nearest thing you can compare it to is probably a spinach. And they chop it up really, really fine. So you get this green kind of stew, and it's mixed with palm oil and spices and chili, because everything in Sierra Leone has plenty of chili in it. And it's doesn't sound like very much, but it's actually incredible to taste it. It's really Moorish, and you get these massive bowls of it for really very little money. So that can keep you going. It's a great thing to eat if you're a vegetarian and you don't eat meat or fish.
Well, that's very interesting, because looking at it, it looks disgusting.
but I assure you, it tastes really good. So ignore how it looks and just stick your spoon in and try it.
The way you describe it, I think it's one of those things that it looks awful. But then when you have a small sip, like, you know what? Actually, it's not that bad. It's not that bad. Okay, is there any traditional drink that they're having over there?
Oh, I guess it's palm wine or palm spirit, which they have
wine
quite a few places in Africa. So they basically tap off the palm trees. So the sap from the palm tree gets collected in generally a really dirty plastic container, and that's lightly fermented, and you get this sort of milky colored, slightly lumpy, nutty flavored alcoholic drink. It's not going to knock you over. It's not really strong. You'd have to drink liters and liters of it before you got off your face or anything. But that's kind of what people would drink traditionally before, you know, the advent of bottled beers and that kind of thing.
That sounds interesting to me. Because
interesting is the word for it, I think. It's not my favorite drink, but it's definitely worth trying.
Why is that your favorite?
It's just a little bit strange. I think, it's one of those things where you have to grow up with it to truly understand it. And if you come from it from abroad, it just kind of doesn't really make sense.
Okay. So when we got there, would you say we should stay at Freetown and then just travel around it? So mainly we can land in Freetown and stay there and then travel a day trip, go back, travel a day trip. Is that what you recommend?
So yeah, mostly you could definitely base yourself in Freetown. Some of the places, as I say, so Kent, which is the gateway to the Banana Islands, is at the opposite end of the Freetown Peninsula, and that's just 2 hours away. So that gives you an indication of distances. But if you're going maybe to Bunce Island, which is connected to the transatlantic slave trade, that's another tricky place to get to. So you're going to want to stay the night somewhere nearby and then maybe head back to Freetown.
Okay. I think, well, we covered a lot. Can you just repeat what you said at the beginning about Freetown and the slavery? How is it connected? Because I couldn't understand it very well, and I just want to make sure that I understand it.
Sure. So Freetown was created as a base for freed slaves. So when the British decided that slavery was no longer a good idea, they turned their attention to rescuing slaves that were sailing across the Atlantic from other countries, and they returned them to Africa. But instead of returning them to where they came from, they just kind of returned them to Sierra Leone and Liberia. So that's why Freetown is called Freetown, because it was the town of the free. That's why Liberia has the name Liberia, because it was for freed slaves.
Oh, because what I know, you know, it was for centuries, that's where, you know, somewhere probably from Gabon, or I mean from the west part of Africa, slaves were transported to USA.
Yeah.
So basically, yeah, they were bringing them back after that.
Pretty much from Sierra Leone right the way around to Gabon, there were various ports when they were basically taking human beings, buying them and shipping them across the Atlantic to the United States, to the Caribbean, and to Brazil to work on the various plantations of tobacco and cotton and sugar that are in that part of the world.
And then they decided, okay, let's bring them all the way back. But then you just drop them in Sierra Leone and like, okay, on your way.
Not necessarily bringing those back that were already in America, but other countries in Europe were still taking slaves across the Atlantic when the British had given up. So they were basically, the British were basically raiding the slave ships that were crossing the Atlantic and taking the slaves back with the idea that they were freeing them by returning them to Sierra Leone.
Wow, that's interesting. Okay, well, that was really insightful. Is there anything that we missed, you think, but is worth mentioning about Sierra Leone?
I think the important thing to say is that you shouldn't base your opinions of Sierra Leone from seeing news stories, whether that's from the Civil War in the 1990s to the Ebola outbreak, which ended in 2016, so just before I arrived for my second trip, because that's going to give you the idea that it's a desperate and horrid place that you're never going to want to go to. So grab a guidebook. There is a guidebook to Sierra Leone. Just check out pictures on Google, and you can see this amazing tropical paradise, which has got everything to make it this fantastic holiday destination. If you, there is a little bit of effort involved. It's not like heading to Jamaica or somewhere, but the rewards you get from doing that will stay with you for much, much longer, I think.
Yeah, you mentioned the Civil War, which straight away reminded me, and together with the name of the country, it reminded me of Blood Diamond, which is a great movie with Leonardo DiCaprio. It's about Sierra Leone. Well, great. And I agree with you. And it's not just about Sierra Leone. I think people listen to the media way too much, and they're, you know, projecting countries, regions, cities as very bad, you know, don't go there. But then when you go there, it's like, hey, welcome to my place. And I'm like, so just be open-minded and explore it for yourself. Great. Ian, thanks so much.
Yeah.
It was a great pleasure. I learned a lot. I'm sure our listeners as well. And yeah, thanks so much. We can link you have articles about Sierra Leone, right? and pictures?
Yeah, so I best the guest place to head would be my site, which is encircleafrica.org. And I've got basically everything I've ever written on there about anywhere in Africa, and lots of guides I'm slowly writing, making my way around the continent. So you know what to do when you get to these destinations that are slightly more unusual.
Excellent. We will link all that in the description. Perfect. Well, thanks so much, Ian. I wish you a fantastic day and another trip to Sierra Leone very soon.
And that's a wrap for yet another travel episode. Thank you so much for listening the whole thing. If you have listened that on Apple Podcasts, please leave a review. That will mean a lot to me. Also, if you have a friend, a cousin, or a teacher, or anybody else who you think will be suitable for this series, please connect us and let's make this happen. Thanks so much once again. I wish you a fantastic day.